I think we're joined now by Ishmael Reed. Are you there, sir?
I'm here, Phil. Hi. How are you?
Very well, boy. I'm glad to be talking to you. I didn't realize we're going to get two. This is a twofer. You got an article in today's Counterpunch.
Yes, I do.
And,
yes.
And just in time, it's pointing out that the American Historical Association, I guess that's their title, are meeting in Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know if that's a good idea in itself, but that they have to consider issuing an apology for some of the terrible things that they allow to go on. We'll mix these two issues together. First of all, I guess I better ask you, here's this Broadway production, Hamilton.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And your title is Hamilton, the Magical Musical, pardon me, Black Actors Dress Up Like Slave Traders.
Right.
And it's not Halloween. Now, you know, I read all the news, all the press is just gaga over this. They think it's the most marvelous thing, and they're going to show it to school children. You've weighed in on this. Let's start. How did it happen that a group of black and Latino actors find themselves dressed as Hamilton and Jefferson and Washington, slave owners and slave supporters?
Well, that's not the worst offense that black actors in the United States have committed. I had a long list of grievances. But as a matter of fact, we just came out with an anthology called Black Hollywood Unchained that was published by Hakeem Adabudi and Black Independent Press in Chicago, Third World Press at Amazon. And my name has come up in Esquire and other places, Yahoo News, as being one of the critics of Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, because of a piece I wrote in the Wall Street Journal, and he's saying that I did it for the money. Well, I got paid $75, which certainly made a big difference in my income that year. But what I've done is I've assembled a number of scholars, including Houston Baker Jr. and others, intellectuals, Stanley Crouch, to comment on the state of black actors and the kind of films that are being made. So, you know, I was taking that on, and then the Hamilton business came up. I have not seen the musical, but I looked at the spin and the press agentry, and what they're saying, this was something that the Rockefeller Foundation made up when they bought a number of tickets for school children, is that Alexander Hamilton was a immigrant and was against the slave trade.
Mm-hmm.
This is wrong. He not only merchandised the slave trade on behalf of his in-laws, the Schuylers, the wealthy family. He married into a wealthy family. Mm-hmm. But he also owned some slaves. So this is another, monkey with the truth that goes on, that's going on nowadays.
Yeah. Well, Ed, and you point out, it's interesting how so many people think, well, this is more like it. We're going to engage young people. We're going to talk about real American history, and we're going to use rap and all this. But actually, I was struck that that the creator of this production, he was working off one book, basically. I've seen him interviewed. He likes Ron Chernow, isn't it? His book. And somehow or another, that rather narrow reading leads us to this production, because he and Chernow met for hours and hours and hours to get their little story right. And Chernow is not the most progressive man, if I could put it that way.
Well, I think this is a problem with the popular and, you know, official historians who have a sort of crush on what they call great men, like Washington and Jefferson and others that are, you know, there are all these marble statues around the country dedicated to these people.
Yeah.
And they
Rushmore.
Sort of like Yeah, they
when I, you know, when I read you, I want to go and put a, you know, deface Mount Rushmore. That's what, frankly.
Well, I wanted to put Warren Harding up there because Warren Harding was a lover. You know, all these other guys were warriors.
Yeah.
And based upon the love letters that Warren Harding wrote to his mistress.
Maybe you got an idea, but there. That might take off. You be careful with that idea.
I published a tongue-in-cheek op-ed in the San Francisco Chronicle advocating that Warren Harding be put up on Mount Rushmore. But at any rate, just yesterday there was a Timothy Egan in the New York Times said, you know, there's a controversy over who should be on the $10 bill.
Yes.
And he argued that Hamilton still remained on the $10 bill because he was against the slave trade. So I wrote a letter to the Times citing a book, including The Intimate Life of Alexander Hamilton, based chiefly upon original family letters and other documents, many of which have never been published, 1910 by Alan McLean Hamilton. And it says that, you know, he was a slaver and owned slaves and negotiated slaves on behalf of his family. So I sent that to the Times, but there are people getting a lot of money. I think New York Times is one of them, getting a lot of ads. So there's a big payroll, a big market in this thing. As a matter of fact, they sold $30 million in tickets before the thing opened.
Yeah.
So I think that they don't want anybody to upset the historical apple cart.
Yeah, once the thing starts to turn money, it's kind of like the Washington Redskins, right?
Yeah, right.
We need the money.
Yeah. There's a quote from the book. It has been stated that Hamilton never owned a Negro slave, but this is untrue. We find that in his books there are entries showing that he purchased them for himself and for others.
Well, you know, that ought to, again, this just shows how important your article is, because the apologists, certainly, they turn out in droves. And you were one of the people who called out Arthur Schlesinger Jr. for his removing the Trail of Tears.
Well, he apologized.
He did. That was a big victory. I mean,
yeah, well, he ultimately apologized and said that he excused oversight by saying that he was 27 years old when he wrote the book.
Yeah, oversight.
But
as you point out, if he had been a Native American, he wouldn't have committed that oversight.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, Native Americans, this Hamilton comes on the heels of another piece called Bloody, Bloody Andrew, in which another musical that Native Americans really launched a protest against. But Bloody, 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 Bloody Andrew just, that has nothing about the Trail of Tears, and describes Hamilton's problems with Native Americans as skirmishes. And made up a fib. They admit that it was a fib, that Hamilton's mother was murdered by an Indian, and therefore he sought revenge, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Native Americans wrote that the play dehumanizes Native Americans at the source of history about President Andrew Jackson and the Trail of Tears. He's portrayed as a sexy, dance rock star while slurs against Native people go unchallenged. And this was the description given to him by John Meacham, another establishment historian who's now doing a sort of like a love feast over the first George Bush, who invaded Panama. You know, 3,000 people were killed and ran the Willie Horton campaign.
In order to capture a drug dealer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We're speaking to Ishmael Reed, and by the way, the author of this wonderful book, The Complete Muhammad Ali. This issue of the apologies for Hamilton, it's linked to a name that, and you really take him up well in your essay, George Washington, about whom we're not supposed to say anything. Jefferson comes in for a drubbing once in a while, but Hamilton was very close to Washington. If Hamilton had been a sort of a pain in the neck about slavery, Washington would have gotten rid of him.
Absolutely. And there is a another fact that I uncovered during this research. Hamilton accused of the British for being black slave stealers, and described their act as or their action as abominable,
yeah.
because you know the British promised African American who were in bondage freedom if they fought with the British.
Right.
So he was upset about that too. So the idea that he was this abolitionist is just there's no substantiation of that.
Yeah.
And fortunately, there are more players who are entering the history profession. So we have a woman named Professor Michelle Duras of the University of Albany, and she says that she quotes some other Hamilton biographers, and one says Alexander Hamilton's biographers praise Hamilton for being an abolitionist, but they have overstated Hamilton's stance on slavery. She quotes Henry John C. Miller, insisted Hamilton advocated one of the most daring invasions of property rights that ever made, the abolition of Negro slavery. And she quotes biographer Forrest McDonald, who maintains that Hamilton was an abolitionist on that subject, he never wavered. She writes, Hamilton's position on slavery is more complex than his biographers suggest. Some historians maintain that Hamilton's birth on these West Indian islands instilled in him a hatred for the brutalities of slavery. And she said, historian James Oliver Horton suggested Hamilton's childhood surrounded by the slave system in the West Indies would shape Alexander's mm-hmm. attitudes about race and slavery for the rest of his life. She writes, no existing documents of Hamilton support this claim. Hamilton never mentioned anything in his correspondence about the horrors of plantation slavery in the West Indies. She says, Hamilton's involvement in the selling of slaves suggests that his position against slavery is not absolute.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So many of these people use a sort of the psychological thing. They place themselves in St. Nevis, and they say, well, if I'd been there, I would have thought this, so he must have thought that. But there's no evidence that he did. Kind of important.
Well, what they've created here, Phil, in the United States is William Simon's counterintelligentsia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that extends to culture, not only politics, but culture. So that if you raise these questions, they accuse you of political correctness.
Yeah, well, you're a danger to the republic because they have all these icons that about whom we're not supposed to say anything embarrassing. But you, by the way, you expressed disappointment in the president himself because he's been boosting this, has he not? The show itself.
Yeah. Well,
I think
you
think it's Harvard's fault. I think
I believe that. I think Harvard. Well, Harvard is you know one of those schools that. Whose main purpose is to uphold the empire.
Mm-hmm.
And they will select a few natives to, you know, assimilate and speak through them, use them as proxies.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, it's unfortunate the president would, I mean, he knows, he must know better than mm-hmm. to endorse something like this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost as bad as his choosing Bruce Springsteen's Merry Christmas Baby with Charles Brown.
Yeah.
The great Charles Brown originated that song. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
I guess he did praise it, and I guess that they're big box office
well,
because of that.
How about this thesis? You point out that, in fact, having Afrocentric schools might be this play, this musical, is probably the best argument for it. I would attach that to a point. Nobody got the goods on Jefferson, in my opinion, until a black woman historian decided to study him and Sally Hennings. And that was devastating. The American historical establishment almost crucified that woman. But it was her, partly as a result of the struggle against racism in the 1960s, that made this whole thing come eventually, the truth to come out.
Well, the next DNA finding will be that which explores the relationship between George Washington and a slave named Venus.
Mm-hmm.
This is still below the
surface. That name might be a giveaway.
Absolutely. But this is below the surface. And Ted Lange, who used to be on a show down here called Love Boat,
mm-hmm.
has written a play about it. and has done some research. And he's not the only one. There are others who've there are all these black people named Washington.
Yeah.
In this country.
Well, boy, you have a wonderful detailed fact that's in your article, which is that that visitors to Washington's plantation, I think a generation beyond him, noted that half of the slaves were biracial.
His wife's daughter's plantation, Custis, who married Robert E. Lee.
Yeah, Washington is. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he married Washington's stepdaughter, Martha Washington's daughter, and they had the plantation, which is now Arlington Cemetery. And this is another. This came from another woman historian who was accidentally killed last year, who just pulled the covers off of that. The Lee plantation, where half the slaves were biracial, and yes. Lee could, you know, administer the whip to his so-called captives. Now, for the states' rights argument that the war wasn't fought over slavery, Robert E. Lee and both Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee were broke after the war without their slaves. As a matter of fact, his daughter, Robert E. Lee's daughter, had to go and beg people to give him a job. And he finally became president of this college that was fledgling then, Washington Lee University. So I think it's going to take another generation of historians to straighten all this out. Now, I've gotten very little support for my arguments against Hamilton and against some of the movies here, because I think some of the intellectuals of my generation are just worn out. I'm tired. Yeah. I'll be 78 in February. I think people are just my generation. It's going to have to take the young people to continue this, but we're really burnt out.
Well, it's a struggle against racism itself. I mean, we have this phenomenon that comes in a general rubric, Black Lives Matter. I mean, this is I was happy to see at the University of Missouri people starting to talk, well, who built this university? You know, they're talking about maybe we should allow this many black people, that many. Well, who built it?
No, they should go after the curriculum. There just seems to be a consensus on the part of the left and the right in this country that there's such a thing as Eurocentrism. Now, you've been to Europe, and I've been there, and I've never heard that expression over there. I just came from Switzerland, where there was a big fight about whose dialect should be used in school within the same country.
Yeah.
So, you know, much more complex than this romanticism, how this Europe is romanticized in this country. I've never heard the term Western civilization of Europe. You hear it over here a lot.
Yeah. They mean Texas when they say.
I guess you're right.
When they say Western civilization, Texas, Oklahoma, some of the key places that building of humanitarian ideology.
Seriously, Phil, I think that. This romanticizing of the South has done a lot of damage.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how many people would be out there greeting the president, waving Confederate flags if they really knew the true history of what went on down there.
Well, indeed, and the fight is over their attempt to head off people who are trying to do basic research on Jefferson, Washington, and such, because that would undermine their whole romantic story. I mean, we had Ted Turner and a bunch of Hollywood people who ought to be ashamed of themselves made a movie, I think it was called The Generals.
Gods and Generals.
And Ted Turner even put himself in the movie playing a Confederate general.
He's a Confederate apologist. As a matter of fact, they say when you go to a party at his house, you're greeted by the theme from Gone with the Wind.
Oh, my. You can see what kind of a fight we're in.
I know. And it also explains the kind of images you get of black people on CNN.
Which he
found it.
Yeah. I saw the director, producer, and star of the Hamilton, and he was on Stephen Colbert, and they made the whole discussion about the fight to keep Hamilton. It's a $10 bill, is it? It's to keep him on the 10.
Yeah, right.
Because
yeah,
at the moment, we had just been, there has been a broad discussion, I noticed, historians and others about putting a woman on a American bill, and everybody said, "Oh yes, it's time," and they were debating who. And now all of a sudden it's become, oh, no, we mustn't take off this wonderful founding father that we'd all forgotten about.
An abolitionist.
Yeah, the abolitionist, Hamilton. And the Mr. Miranda was very strong on that. He said, oh, we're going to win this. You know, Hamilton's going to stay because he's cute and he's marvelous. And I think you made a point, but we're supposed to admire him because he was smart. So smart, he married a banker's daughter, right?
That's what they always say. They always say that, you know, you can excuse what Jefferson did to his slaves and all the rest because he was smart.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what's the difference between Jefferson and some of these guys they find who've kept women in the basement or something for 35 years or whatever?
Yeah.
You know, like this guy who had those three women down there.
A guy named Castro.
You call that case? Was it last year or something?
Yes.
Or before?
Cleveland.
I said, yeah, it took a lot of intelligence to do that. He evaded the social workers. He evaded his family. I mean, that's
brains.
That's just brains.
Yeah. But it is very unfortunate. They've decided to try to continue with this. Well, by the way, and I have one quibble. You referred to Hamilton's assassin, Aaron Burr, but I thought he killed him in a fair fight.
I don't think I have that. I don't think I mentioned that in this article.
Oh, okay. Well, you're off on that one. But Burr comes in for a bad rep, and he and Hamilton were both in New York, and they were senators in the state legislature, and allegedly they both belonged to an abolition society. But I read about it that it was Burr who actually went and cast a vote. Hamilton was missing that day when they voted in the state legislature of New York to abolish slaves in the state. By the way, that motion failed. But Burr at least went and voted. Hamilton didn't even show up.
Well, they're all hypocrites. You know, Jefferson wanted to include in the Declaration of Independence that the English were these evil slave traders.
Yeah. what chance? You suggested that the American Historical Association meeting in Atlanta, Georgia, will join this campaign, that they should invite Mr. James Loewen to give them the... What do you find in Mr. Loewen's work that would help them out?
Well, I think Loewen has done a lot on the false history of the Confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, my daughter just gave my wife a Christmas present, which is his latest book about the Confederacy. So, and he goes around, you know, in his books he talks about all these monuments in the South that have no basis in fact. I mean, they're just made-up stories. So he'd be a perfect person to deliver a keynote. I'm thinking about I think it was American Psychological Association that admitted that it was wrong about homosexuality. You remember they classified homosexuality
as
a aberration or a disease or whatever, and then they change their minds. Well, the American Historical Society can do the same thing. And it's appropriate that they, are holding their convention in Atlanta in January because Gone with the Wind premiered there, and Hattie McDaniel, who took over the movie, who really was the star of the movie, wasn't invited because of segregation.
Yeah, I mean, this would be the moment. That's also, Atlanta is the home of Stone Mountain.
Oh, absolutely.
And it sits. I've gone and looked at it with my mouth hanging open. That there is Jefferson Davis and Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee riding along on this huge mountain. They ought to take the Historical Society out there, and I wonder if there's any chance of this. I mean, it's wonderful that you're raising it, and matter of fact, I think you've really done as much as anybody, and after all, you're a novelist and poet and playwright, but you've got historians all jumping around like a cat on a hot tin roof.
Well, I think that Black Lives Matter, which is under attack here, most recently in New York, I get up in the morning, I look at the New York Times editorial page, and I think it's chasing me. It's stalking me. I mean, you have these guys there. But anyway, yesterday, one of their writers sort of like... put down the movements and Black Lives Matter. You know, they're upset with Black Lives Matter. They're disrupting things. And this guy is concerned about some of the militants suppressing free speech.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he has a great availability for free speech because he's supported by ExxonMobil. They pay for his speech.
Yeah.
He's a part of the American Enterprise Institute. Motorola, yeah. All these big companies are paying his bills.
Yeah.
So there's a big scary thing about Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think if some of these other people, members of some of these other ethnic groups, if they're members of their groups were being shot down, shot in the back, and murdered, yeah. I mean, they'd probably be out there, too.
Yeah. Well, but again, on that point about where we get the truth from, frankly, it does have to start with those people who were victimized and assaulted. As Native Americans have been able to find their voice and get control over some publications, they've begun to tell the story and correct it. And you make a good point where the professor, a Jewish professor, told about he had gone to Hebrew school, and when he went then over to the public school, that was a great story. I'll let you tell that.
Yeah, they're glorifying the crusade.
Yeah.
And she mentioned that the crusade, crusaders created pogroms.
And murdered the Jews of Jerusalem.
Absolutely.
And
so I think.
So he knew that from Hebrew school. He wouldn't have got it in the public school.
Yeah, but the parallel, Phil, is that it's like the German professors who went along with Nazism, like Heidegger and all of them. You know,
mm-hmm.
who went along with the this movement in Germany that committed all these atrocities.
Yeah. Well, that's
how many spoke up?
Yeah. Yeah, not that many. The you also point out that, and I think this is a very important part of it too. These things get set, it's almost like in stone. But here is Shelby Foote. He's almost a walking Confederate actor or something. He's got the lovely accent and the great stories, but then he has he makes parallel between the Klan and the French Resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's ironic.
And we all keep smiling and say, good old Shelby.
Yeah, his grandfather was Jewish, which just makes it even more ironic.
Yeah. And another one I'd like to add myself as a footnote for you. You mentioned Winston Groom, the author of Forrest Gump. I went into Atlanta, and I had about a half day to look around, so I decided I'd walk in a public library to see what I could find. And I found six copies of his book, Forrest Gump. I said, this library needs six copies? I mean, they must be busy with
he's
that book.
He's a Confederate apologist. His book, Shrouds of Glory. Mm-hmm. A big old praise and tribute for the Confederacy.
Honor comes up a lot. Glory. Tradition. I love tradition.
Yep.
Yeah, our tradition
is... Phil, I want to thank all the Canadian readers who kept keeping my book afloat. There's a deafening silence about the book down here. So.
About your Muhammad Ali?
Oh, yes. It's a blackout. It's a boycott by the media. Except for the black press and the Muslim press.
Well...
But I
think it's a very important book, and I'm glad you do note that Canadians do. We're kind of voyeurs, you know. We watch the Americans.
They
make us nervous.
The problem is I go into the racist history of the sports writing community in this country, and I think a lot of, as a matter of fact, they mentioned that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, Jack London, who coined the term the Great White Hope,
mm-hmm.
I went back and read his actual coverage of Jack Johnson. He's very fair, fairer than some of the contemporary sports writers like Larry Merchant.
In that sense, he definitely got a bad rap. I absolutely agree.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you talk about being motivated by the New York Times. You could be motivated almost every day by the sports section. And there's a wonderful football player for the Washington Redskins, the quarterback, Rick Griffin III. Who they have just basically run him out of town.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he's one of the most gifted players ever, but they decided, well, too bad for him, and they just put an X over it.
They're really gleeful about Tiger Woods' problems every day. You know?
Yes.
Poor guy.
But now this
doping scandal with Manning, you see them, circling the wagons already for him. poor Barry Bonds, they were on him for years, and finally he was exonerated.
Yeah. Yeah, no, no. They well, you see, in the case of Manning, they have honor and tradition. It kind of
like,
helps.
Like the deflating footballs with the New England Patriots, right? Yeah.
I'm really glad that today's Counterpunch, should American Historical Association apologize? It's a great thesis. I know you're going to get their attention. You're going to give them the hives because they'll all be passing that around. It's terrific. You wrote it. And of course, the piece, Hamilton the Musical, black actors dress up like slave traders, and it's not Halloween. It's a brilliant piece.
Yeah, I don't know how we reach black actors. They brought back The Color Purple,
yeah,
for Broadway, and I just put some images up on Facebook and challenged the readers to decide whether this was green pastures and cabin in the sky.
Yeah.
Cabin in the sky. Some say green pastures. But it's really like a throwback,
Actors,
women, not a whole bunch of tunes.
They are vulnerable people. I mean, this was set up.
I think you're right.
The 20s and 30s, people used to complain about black actors, and somebody said, well, how do you expect them to make a living?
Yeah, that's true.
In Rochester and Step and Fetch It was.
One of the actresses with Hamilton, black actress, went to the Schuyler home. Still there in New York, I guess. You know, owned by Hamilton's in-laws.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that their daughters were just like the Kardashians. They were the Kardashians of the 1800s. These women had 27 slaves waiting on them.
Pretty easy to be dressed up.
right.
Well,
the other women in the household didn't have time to preen.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's a great article, and this material is in the article. I really urge everybody, please read it, and you will have the correct view, a better take on Alexander Hamilton, and maybe even put a flower on the grave of Aaron Burr for us. Ishmael Reed, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye. And Phil, you were going to
mention. Yes, Phil, you made reference to a book. I just want to tell our listeners the name of it. It's called The Hemingses of Monticello, and the author is an American historian, Annette Gordon Reed. Gordon Reed is a hyphenated
name. That's
the
woman who fought like a tiger
and boy,
for the truth.
And boy, have they pilloried her for having the audacity to.
It ain't over yet.
Yeah, that's right.
She also destroyed not Jefferson, but a bunch of official biographers.
Yes, that's right.
Sank them all like little boats.
The Hemingses of Monticello by Annette Gordon Reed. Yeah. I've read the book. It's a great book. Everybody should get it.
And Ishmael Reed, the complete Muhammad Ali. And as he said, that's the book that nobody wants to hear about because it's got so much stuff in it. Anyway, Hanny, thank you very much. And Phil Conlon and our friend Joan, who did a lot of research for us, who helps with our publication. We appreciate it. See you next week. Sur les uns, sur les deux, mon ami.